Benjamin Gottlieb here in the studio with our engineer, Matt Schwartz, who just reminded me we have a YouTube channel for Shopify Masters. So if you'd like to watch this episode instead of just listening to it, head over to YouTube or the YouTube app and search for Shopify Masters. And also, thank you so much for your continued support.
I like bringing people together around a common interest. All of these activities to me just remind me of where I'm at and like where my feet are.
Hey, I'm Shweng Esther Shan, and welcome to Shopify On Location in Los Angeles, where we are chatting with some of the biggest changemakers in the city. LA is the place where you can get from the mountains to the beaches to the desert all in one day. For Michael Washington, he was missing a community where he can go on these adventures with. So he launched Usal Project to teach and host events on stargazing, fly fishing, and even making ceramics from wild clay.
People are walking away and they've met someone new, or they've learned something that they now are really interested in. When we have like a 40% return customer rate with no subscription model or anything like that, that is a successful event.
These events caught the attention of brands like Nike and North Face, and they've collaborated together.
We're just making gear accessible. We're making the prices accessible. It's leading to excitement from, you know, brands, and that can be a route for financial success.
Michael is my guest today, and I'm very excited to chat about how he's cultivated a loyal following and is growing the brand through partnerships. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Very excited to chat. I think the concept of Usal is so special, but it feels like it was a tough task. You have to convince people to spend their time and their money to hang out with you. How did this all begin?
Yeah, well, it's not as tough as you think. People like to get outside. They're looking for people to connect with. It's a hard place to do that in Los Angeles, given the spread outness that we live and the pods that we kind of exist in, from cars to homes to our work to getting around. It can feel kind of hard to interact. So it was a hypothesis for sure that people were interested. However, deep down, I felt like there was always people here that would want to exist in management for about 10 years. Moved here from Colorado to do that in 2012. Was at the last kind of bit of my career in the music industry. And I felt like the pandemic was a violent push into what maybe was going to be next for me. Very much so on outdoor trips that I was doing during that time period, because it was kind of the only safe thing to do was to go far, very far away from a city outside alone. In those moments, very much having kind of a lot of time to think about, okay, what does the next 5-10 years feel like for me? Also a time period that I was very much moved by a lot of the social justice things that were going on in the world. Very much thinking about what fulfills me as a person. How can I help in ways that I know that I can? Anything from climate change to diversity issues to just things that, you know, just trying to figure out what could be my place and role in everything. And at that time, I kept getting reached out to by a lot of people through my personal trips. A lot more people seemed to be more interested in how to connect the outdoors and nature, and have and essentially felt like they had nowhere to go. So I would do research trying to find groups similar to what Usal is now, and would come up short, couldn't find anything, and felt pretty confused. This idea didn't already exist. Myself being kind of an entrepreneurial spirit, I think when you have that moment where you're, wait, why doesn't this thing exist? There's a clear path in my head how it could roll out, how it could be a thing, how it could be very successful, and there's nothing out there like it. I think certain people have that kind of, that light turns on in their head. I feel like I'm one of those people, and it kind of couldn't get it out of my brain that, man, this could be a thing. So kind of put it away for that of 2020. Didn't really think too much about it. Always felt like, wow, this would be a great idea if someone did this. Didn't feel like I was the guy. I didn't grow up in Texas doing outdoorsy things. I did go to Colorado, get a nice taste of what the outdoors can do for my lifestyle. I did come to LA and start to understand how I can interact with the outdoors on my own. It took me a while to kind of forge that relationship. But yeah, you know, imposter syndrome was a big thing in terms of starting something for myself. I always worked for other people, felt very good as a teammate, never wanted to be the Michael Jordan, was good at being like the second guy on the team. 2021 was when I decided that I was going to internally start this idea. So started planning it, and then start of 2022, really started putting the idea out there, started doing these personal trips with friends to kind of see what would work, what kind of trips would work, what kind of things would be interesting to people, and then had the opportunity to launch Earth Day 2022 with an event series that we did with Arc'teryx. But that was the loose trajectory, a lot of getting through my own personal doubt, and then always knowing it was a good idea, but very happy that I took that time to think more about it, because I feel like that's led to its success.
Yeah, amazing journey. I think in business textbooks, they'll talk about a gap in the market, and that for you was actually very personal, right? You were looking for something that you couldn't find, and you wanted a community, but it didn't exist. And also the part where you're having to work through yourself, amp yourself up to actually launch it. I think that's the part where a lot of entrepreneurs actually never start their journey. What do you think ultimately was the push point where you were saying, I'm actually going to execute and this is something that I'm going to build?
Truthfully, it was the continued distaste in what I was currently doing. It was hard for me to let go of that feeling, even when the world came back to normal after COVID and music shows started up again and the music industry kind of started to kind of get back into motion. It just kind of, there was a distaste in my mouth with in terms of why was I doing this and what, you know, and really losing sight in that. And the real reasons I got into the music industry was community building. I felt like there was a lot more room for it pre-streaming platforms, pre-Spotify, pre-iTunes, Apple Music, given the necessity for more regional communities to support regional artists in ways like merch and shows that felt more community-driven and felt like you can exist within a bubble and that is okay. You don't need to compete with Taylor Swift for streams to feel successful. And that was the time when I got into the music industry. And that was a very fun time because it was really geared around strictly community building around artists. And I started to lose sight of that, you know, towards the end of my career. But then it was nice to really understand, wow, that is what I really like to do. Like you could sub in anything, food, music, outdoors, clothing. I think for me, the piece that always was going to remain the same was that I liked being the producer of bringing people together around a common interest. So for me in music, that was artists and that was shows and putting the microphone literally up to people that I felt were interesting in the music world and sharing their story and helping them share their story and, you know, creating opportunities for them to reach people. What I do now is it's funny. It's exactly the same. You know, it's just with, instead of a rock and roll star, it's a forager.
Yeah. And I love that it's only when you're reflecting, you can see the dots connecting together and that past experience really translates to showcase all these experts and artists in a new way. Of course, at the foundation, it's the events. And I think there's a lot of complexities, right? There's nuance and there's a lot of interaction, a lot of uncontrollables to actually make a quote unquote successful event. So I guess for you, how do you ensure an event is successful, is good for each individual participant?
Yeah, I mean, I think the understanding for whether it's your company or yourself, what determines a successful event is very much steeped in knowing before that event even starts, well before, what deems something successful to you, which there's so many metrics. For some people, that's amount of people. Mm-hmm. If I can get 2,000 people to this event, then it's a successful event. But I think what people lose sight of when they're thinking about scale as a metric of success is what people actually took away from that event individually. What was the experience that that person had? Do you care that they left that event without really thinking at all about your brand mm-hmm. or connecting to anyone else in a deep way? They came with their friends. They stuck around their friends. They maybe took one picture that they posted on their Instagram story. But after that event, are they going to carry that flag with them? Or was there something there that they learned? Has their life altered in any way? Do you care about that metric? Which can be a no. You know, and then in that sense, it's just about reach, and that maybe one Instagram story is part of that KPI that lends itself to, you know, deciding what feels successful. For us, what a successful event is very different. It's very much quality over quantity. It's been a lot of testing to understand what is the size of an event where people stop being able to speak to others in a way that feels natural. Mm-hmm. When you're in a room full of 10 people versus a room full of 50 people, you'll notice the way that people talk is different. You'll notice that they're not as open. You'll notice that they'll maybe stick to the people they know. You'll notice that it's a little more awkward. So for us, well, then that means maybe 50 person events, as much as we could probably sell 50 tickets, doesn't deem a successful event. So finding what that number of people, because for us, a successful event means that people are walking away and they've met someone new, or they've learned something that they now are really interested in, or, you know, there's something that happened at this event that has, you know, clicked something in their brains that has opened up maybe a new gate, a new way of thinking, or just allowed them to feel like they're accepted now into a world that maybe they felt was really hard to get into, which for us can be the outdoors or outdoor experiences. So that is a successful event if people are able to get to those kind of different things. And measuring that becomes pretty hard, you know. But I will say, when we have like a 40% return customer rate with no subscription model or anything like that, that to me is kind of, that plays exactly into the success. Yeah. So it's a long-term kind of play. It's, yeah, maybe not a quick kind of flashy, mm-hmm. you know, scenario, but to me, you know, I've been to so many events, played shows at Coachella with bands that I've worked with, and so seen it all. But I think that starting low and slow, starting, you know, smaller events, getting people really integrated with each other, that's exciting to me. It's just a different model. It's different than what I see out there. And I think for me, that feels unique and exciting.
Yeah, it is special because you care about the impact it has on the participants. I think it also kind of ties back to the ability that you and your team are able to spot these interests and create events around them because they're so unique, from making ceramics, from forged clay to making sourdough, diving in the ocean, stargazing, fly fishing. How do you know, like, which kind of events to create? How do you spot trends and, like, mm-hmm. make events around them?
We're very lucky because me personally, I'm very ADHD with my interests. So curiosity plays a huge role in what we do. And like I said, thankfully, I'm a very curious person, and I find so many different things interesting. And I think, like, a lot of communities maybe center around certain levels of outdoor activity that are maybe more wellness. And so then you get the tea ceremony, breathwork, yoga side, and some communities center around outdoor activities and maybe more physical. So you get the more running super fast, climbing big mountains. For me, it's everything, you know. So, or it's even from a food perspective, I find that's super interesting and learning about where our food comes from. And then innately, that becomes a nature experience. Learning about how your food is grown and where it comes from locally. And that's something I'm also interested in. So, everything we do lends itself to myself and my other three partners, our interests, you know. So mm-hmm. everything you see is kind of a weirdly like aligned thing of what's going on in our heads at all times, you know. So I love to surf, I love to climb, I love to run, I love to camp, I love foraging, I love learning about like invasive plants versus non-invasive plants. Stargazing, it just opens up the idea of like what is around us and how small we are. And, you know, all these activities to me just remind me of where I'm at and like where my feet are, and lets go of kind of the superficial, I think, reasons why people don't live in LA, and reminds me of why I actually love living here. As far as seeing trends spike, and I feel like we don't really have any metric or algorithm that tells us, oh, we should be doing this or that, other than how our community responds to things mm-hmm. we put out there. So a lot of it is trial and error, you know, and not being afraid to do an event that maybe, okay, that one didn't connect. You know, I wanted to do, for the longest time, I wanted to do bushcraft skills. Do you know what bushcraft skills
no,
are?
No, what are?
So that's like learning how to, essentially, say, if you were to drop in the middle of the woods and you needed to find food, make a fire with nothing but your hands, that's essentially what, you know, learning bushcraft skills are. And I was like, I've always been super. Yes, exactly.
On a next level.
So I've always been super interested in that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, great, I finally found the guy. Put the event. I'm like, this is going to go crazy. No one bought a ticket. You know, no one wanted to go. And that's okay. You know, and I think I think failure is also a great metric for knowing where you are just as much as success is. And it's all good. These are all things that build back into like who we are and how we want to showcase what we do. So
yeah,
even if things are failures, there's still successes to be had in them.
Yeah, you're learning a lot from them. And I feel like you're being also modest. You do have a lot of sold out events. And I think what's cool is you've maintained a very low cost that is accessible for whoever wants to be a part of an event. And I think the question here is, how do founders create something that is still accessible and impactful in whichever way they're doing, and still be profitable? Because I think there's a lot of elements at play here.
Yeah. I think that is the number one question, that if you can figure out, you're going to have a good successful business. If you're a business that is at the ethos, which for us is accessibility, is very much steeped in like who we are and how we represent ourselves. So what goes into accessibility? Obviously, the idea that anyone can come to our events. You know, there's no Soho House metric of like needing to be accepted or club, you know, like collective vibe. It's anyone at any time can sign up to any event. So that goes into the accessibility factor of it. Obviously, what other things go into it? Access to gear. A lot of our events, especially the camping trips, mm-hmm. We have gear that has been donated from people like the North Face, amazing, like brand new gear from REI and things like that, that people get to use for free on our events. Because a big thing for me is like, why should you pay $2,000 for a fly fishing setup if you're going for your first time and you have no idea if you actually want to keep doing this? It doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. We've figured out ways to do that for like snowboarding and skiing. You go to a mountain, you can rent gear, and then mm-hmm. you like it, cool, then you go buy it. There's not that kind of way of doing things for things like fly fishing, things like climbing, surfing, all these other, you know, awesome activities. They make you kind of go all in, right? So accessibility also lends itself to gear, and we try to work around that with having a gear library. And then, like you said, yeah, the price point. For me, you know, it was kind of a deep dive into, okay, what is out there? You know, maybe there's no USOL version community in LA, but what's in the world? And mm-hmm. seeing how people essentially price these types of things kind of blew my mind. How expensive mm-hmm. experiential travel, outdoorsy, essentially companies are. It's stuff that I wouldn't even be able to afford in this, where I'm at in my life, in my like mid 30s, let alone when I was, you know, maybe coming out of college, which I'm like, not to say that our demographic is trying to be for that generation, but more so what's interesting to me is speaking or having a place for people that never have been able to do these types of activities. And a lot of times those are the people that don't own a home yet. You know what I mean? They aren't the kind of 1%. They don't like drive a fancy car. They aren't able to kind of like spend that amount of money for fun, essentially, for leisure. The communities were either, you know, pricing people out, or a lot of these communities were going the nonprofit route, which is great. But I felt a little bit intrigued with the idea that, like, you know, people doing these types of experiences, the teachers, for instance, like, they should get paid. I think, like, if people are spending $20 on a coffee every single morning, what's it to them to pay $30 for a foraging hike? Mm-hmm. I feel like the scale was just not, it was so either one way or the other way. I felt like there's a lot of middle ground for finding a price point that made sense to our community, to LA, but wasn't asking too much, you know, for no reason, really. After doing all the research and what it takes to do all these events, it's not that expensive to run, you know, on the way that we do it. So we try to make the prices as cheap as possible, right? That said, then your question, you know, the question is, well, how do you make money long term? Mm-hmm. Well, for us, and what we're trying to figure out right now is basically making money elsewhere. You know, I think for a long time, the thought was, well, these community events, you know, maybe that's the only thing that we'll do. But, you know, in the work that we've done this year with the brands and the consulting work that we get to do with brands, be it kind of helping them understand what, you know, these types of people are interested in from a product perspective, and doing kind of research and development work, or doing full on kind of content shoots, or doing full on kind of private events for brands or for companies and things like that. So basically finding other ways to find financial success that doesn't muddle up what our ethos is around these community events. Because if I could keep the community events free or as successful as possible, that leads to all the amazing other things that we get to do, because everyone's interested in USOL because our consumer is younger, more hip, more with the times, more culturally kind of relevant than the customers that they're seeing come into their stores. And they're asking, well, how are you unearthing these people, and where is it coming from? And I think really it's coming from what we just said. We're just making gear accessible. We're making the prices accessible. And we're speaking to an audience that maybe, like, from a creative point of view, is different than the way that these brands can. And so it's bringing in a new style of customer. Yeah. And it's leading to excitement from, you know, brands and other partners. And that can be a route for financial success. So hopefully it's finding other pools that can essentially show themselves once you've done a really good job making what your ethos is successful.
Yeah. I think we touched on partnerships a lot with REI, Nike, North Face, and I think it gives a really cool foundation because, like you mentioned, there could be collaboration through consulting work or collections that you've designed through merch. And this is a really cool way where you're reaching profitability that other people might not think about, where you're still able to keep the core essence of USOL, the thing that started at all the events exactly as they are, while you're still able to explore profitability. How did you eventually find those partners, build those relationships, and have them grow? Because those relationships are kind of essential for any business owner, and they would love to understand how they can do it for their own companies as well.
Outside of our first event, which was a fun, interesting story that I can talk about, but which was with Arc'teryx, the LA Arc'teryx team, if you're doing something right, they come to you, which is kind of sometimes hard to hear. There's not really a magic trick about getting in touch with brands. If you have to reach them, they're not going to be as interested. If you're doing something right, they're gonna find a way to reach you, which is thankfully how it's been for us. The way that we've gotten that initial contact with brands is they've seen what we're doing, and it's spiked in their internal meetings through their, you know, algorithm mechanisms, through people that work at the company, and then they get in touch. And these brands are bigger than people think. It's really the best relationships come when we're getting hit up by multiple different, essentially sectors of the brand. So the social team might hit us first and be like, wow, like, we'd want to do like a content thing. And then the product team sees some stuff we're doing, and then they're hitting us up, and then they don't realize that they've all hit us up separately until someone figures it out. And they're like, wait, we're all talking to Usul right now? And then those are the best, and that's the best kind of problem to have, because then they're like, wow, this is great. This means that like there's a lot of synergy, because obviously these companies, it's hard for sometimes their internal teams to connect and have synergy across what they're all thinking is cool.
Yeah.
So when our name is being brought into up in various different teams within one brand, I think that is a really good sign. And that those are the types of brands that, you know, I would look to build around. Not to say that other brands are bad, or like it's bad if only one part of the team of a brand is reaching out. It's just usually it doesn't really lend itself to being a deeper connection off the bat. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which is totally fine, because sometimes things come back around later. But deeper connection is definitely the goal, is to not, you know, work with 20 brands, but maybe like there's five that like we constantly like reach out to for certain things.
I also think it's also a testament to all the touch points that Usul has, because I think maybe someone noticed it from a friend who went to an event and they have a positive word of mouth kind of anecdote about how great the brand is. But then, you know, the team at Nike or North Face, they'll research you, go on your site, and it's truly uniquely built. It is like entering another dimension. So yeah, like talk to us about having the same experience, showcasing that Usul kind of essence in person, online, and also now the retail store.
The online is so important. That's everyone's first touch understanding of what are you about? And say you're rolling out an album. Okay, so what does this album look like? You know, obviously we know what it sounds like, but how do we manifest what it looks like so that it translates through online that gets people interested? What's the rollout going to look like? What's the music video going to look like? What is, you know, what are the press pictures going to be? Obviously, those are all conversations that, you know, we would be having internally before we roll something out. And when I came to the idea of Usul, I really put a lot of effort in creating something that had a vision from a more graphic design and creative level. That was something that I just hadn't seen in many outdoor communities. That, you know, not necessarily their fault, but didn't really put much emphasis on graphic design. It was just about the events. It was just about getting outside, art direction, photo direction, coming at it from more of a brand perspective wasn't really the idea. It's a community. It's not a brand. We're a community, but like to me, you have to brand a community to get people to understand what it is you're about and what do you prioritize as interesting and important. So things like photo direction on your Instagram, or even how you word your captions, these are all like little like things that people might not even like realize that they are taking into account. But everyone's reading things, they're looking at things, they're looking at their graphic design.
Yeah, it's editorial decisions you've made that actually builds an identity for you.
Yeah. And that makes people be like, okay, this feels different than Airbnb experiences. Sure, there's surf lessons on both websites, but I'm booking mine through Usul because I've, in my head, it's gone through all the hoops that I wanted to go through. You wouldn't believe how many people tell me, I loved Usul because of the design. And like, I find that so funny, you know, it's interesting. It's like, that's kind of all it took, was good design to get people interested in the outdoors. And then, you know, hopefully that's really what keeps them around. And then they come to the store and then they see that's a whole nother, like, you know, thing that feels a little bit more new and more, something we're still building out, I would say. But like, but yeah, it's definitely, online feels like the most important piece of it, to in terms of getting people to your product.
Of course, the online experience is beautifully designed. That's what attracts so many people to events. 80% is the ticket sales, 20% is roughly the merch. What are some of like the data points or the tools that have really helped you to understand customers, build a profile, and kind of understand their relationship from tickets to merch, and yeah, connect with them through the data as well?
Really, like, I've always been more of a creative person than analytic, but I will say, and this is like not really, I didn't get forced to plug Shopify here, but I will say that the Shopify backend is pretty easy to understand when it comes to the analytics. And I'm definitely kind of a hawk looking at kind of the month to month and comparing kind of previous trends to new trends and understanding, you know, where our customers are coming from. Sometimes things will spike from random websites that I don't even know posted about us or things like that, and understanding like where traffic is coming to our website or things like what events are kind of being more frequented and products are being more frequented and things like that. So I'm still kind of getting in the weeds on how all that stuff is understanding. However, I feel like it's been super helpful, especially because like I've been more kind of learning by feeling a little bit. You know, when you go to events, you talk to customers, and that's what's nice about having in real life events happening weekly is like every week we can talk to people about like what is actually going on in their heads instead of having to solely depend on analytics to tell me like what people like and don't like. So I will say it's been maybe not as needed at the start of our company, but I feel like now with how we're growing, you know, analytics and kind of having a platform like Shopify to help navigate some of the things that, you know, will help us grow in other cities, for instance, is super helpful.
Yeah. Well, Usul sounds like the ideal blueprint, and I'm sure wherever our listeners and watchers are tuning in, they're thinking, like, are you sharing the blueprint? Is the blueprint going to another city? So what's next?
Yeah. I mean, for us, growth means the idea of reaching more people with what we do. I feel like with LA, where we're at, the amount of events we do, which is around 30 each month, you can imagine, like, it doesn't, I think we're tapped in terms of the amount of events. I think for us, maybe in LA, it'll mean maybe deeper connecting events. So maybe you'll see more like week-long, more retreat-style offerings. Not in terms of like quantity events, but maybe more quality, more deeper in that kind of way. But for us, what's exciting is the idea of a new place and creating a blueprint, hopefully with New York to be the kind of judge of how easily we can open up in other cities and take it from there. But we definitely get asked all the time, Chicago, New York, San Francisco, we need this, you know, so, yeah. It's been baby steps on purpose, you know, kind of leaving like a breadcrumb trail from Silver Lake. You know, all of our first events were like Griffith Park. And then, okay, now let's do Joshua Tree. Okay, now let's go to Morro Bay. Okay, how about Mammoth? You know, so like people are always like, shouldn't you be flying? Why don't you guys go to like Utah or like this? I'm like, there's places to do that. You know, I think what's interesting to me is helping people realize a connection to where they are, you know? I mean, it's again, back to myself, it's giving me more love for where I am and living in LA. Once I realize what's around me, and having a connection to the land. So, that's exciting to me rather than making people go, you know, to Utah, which is great. I'm sure Utah is amazing, but, showing people even like what's at Mount Baldy or, you know, trails in Griffith Park, they never knew were there. There's something to be said about that being important.
Yeah. Our team just bonded through a hike in Griffith Park. If it felt impossible, but it was possible. So
nice.
I'm very excited to see you tackle the impossible and expand to new cities. So thank you so much for being here, Michael.
Thank you for having me.